Winter made a encore yesterday as parts of Ohio got 2 or 3 inches of snow, but today we're getting more spring-like weather with some rain, temperatures 60s or even above 70 in some places. But if we go several hours to the south-southeast to the Sunshine State of Florida, it's pretty much either spring or summer every day in Boca Raton. Yes, and Boca Raton is the home of Dr. Ron Feinman, a frequent guest on the show and good friend of mine and good friend of the radio stations, and got a lot of things to talk about today. On his blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, some provocative and thought-provoking topics, which we shall address. And like any show here at The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1, there is always a surprise or two. Ron, how are you doing today for our first show in April?
I'm doing very well. It's nice to be in April, and again, thanks for inviting me onto the show again. It's going to be getting warmer very quickly here. Instead of just being in the 70s, it's probably going to be in the 80s soon because it's already almost like the summertime here for South Florida.
Now, neither you nor I celebrate Easter. Personally, I enjoy rabbits as a dinner treat, and we'll just kind of leave it at that before anybody starts throwing any rabbit eggs at me. Of course, that wouldn't be possible because rabbits are mammals, but we can talk about that another time. Easter this year, Ron, was also April Fool's Day. So did you have a good April Fool's Day?
I had a couple people play an April Fool's joke on me, which I didn't realize. One former student of mine said he had accepted, online on Facebook, said he had accepted a job teaching English in Japan. And I said, really? I wrote back to him, and I said, wow. I said, when are you leaving? And then he said, April Fool's joke he wrote. So I said, boo, back to him.
Actually, Ron, I thought the April Fool's joke might have been that somebody bought you a Make America Great Again cap and bought you a gift membership to the NRA. Now, that would be a pretty good April Fool's joke, don't you think?
Yes. Well, I tell you one thing. I think Donald Trump, it wasn't an April Fool's joke, but he went on his tirade about DACA, about the children who came over, with their parents years ago, the whole issue of whether they're going to be allowed to remain. And he went after Amazon, and he's off the rails. And he's been attacking, the idea of other countries with trade. And now China, over the weekend, decided they're going to really impose tariffs on our goods, which is going to hurt us a great deal. And suddenly the stock market on Monday, yesterday, really dramatically dropped. So, he's really messing things up again with his mouth on Twitter. Unbelievable. And, in fact, I wrote a couple of days ago about him on Twitter, about that he's attacked. I said, the 4 1/3 targets, I guess it's more than that now, since he announced for president, but not Vladimir Putin, not Stormy Daniels, and get this, not Rachel Maddow of MSNBC, which I heard on MSNBC was the case, and I'm wondering, everybody's wondering, why has he not attacked Rachel Maddow? We have no idea.
That would be a very good question. Of course, Rachel, with her PhD, and someone who's not afraid to provide her opinion, I find her too far to the left, but she's very intelligent. And I admire her.
She was 45 on Monday, yesterday.
Yeah, I admire her greatly. And, she listens to viewpoints. Once you find out more about her, you realize how much she knows. And again, at age 45, people are talking about her as a politician. We brought that up in the past. I'm not sure she wants to leave the media. I think she likes what she does,
no.
But who knows?
No, I don't think she would.
She's a young woman, and we'll find out what might transpire 10 or 20 years down the great road we call life.
Well, she's written a couple of books already. She's very accomplished. A lot of the people at MSNBC have written books. Lawrence O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes and also, what's his name? I can't think of his name. Chris Matthews, the one who interrupts everybody when he asks them a question. He won't let them finish the answer. I've noticed that. It's really annoying.
Ron, you knew that Rachel Maddow was a fellow PhD, right?
Yes, I'm aware that she is. Yeah, but she's not been a professor. I don't think she just went into journalism. She hasn't taught, I think, at all, except maybe elections. But she hasn't actually been a college professor. But she's very accomplished. Yes.
Yeah, like anybody with a lot of education, I have just a lowly master's degree, but 5 publications as we mentioned.
Only so. You have a science master's, remember, right?
That's
a high degree. That's a great accomplishment.
Right.
I congratulate you. That's not easy.
The test tube king. with my MS in chemistry from Clarkson University, which I'll make a plug. The last 2 years, including this year, they are the women's NCAA Division I hockey champion.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow. So, see, I learned something every time I talk to you. Like exactly. You say, you learn from me. I've learned from you, too.
So one thing I wanted to ask, Ron, we're going to talk about some recent blog articles in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, including a recent one about a presidential ticket that has some very real Ohio connections. When I was in Pittsburgh a week and a half ago, and I called into the Scott Spears program now, of course, we talked about Pittsburgh. There was more snow there than in mid and central Ohio. We talked about our upcoming brushes with Mr. Rogers' people. And again, the city, if you've ever driven in it, it's not really possible to go in a straight line unless you're going a couple blocks downtown. You always have to backtrack. But that's part of the fun. It's a gorgeous town, kind of like taking Cincinnati with one river and putting three rivers there instead, plus the professional sports teams. And again, a rivalry between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Columbus Blue Jackets. Anywho, what I wanted to say, Ron, is Scott started talking about, I'm not sure if you heard the show or not, but the shows that you and I have, which are frequent and often a little controversial and again, provocative, to put it mildly. One thing he did ask me, Ron, was, does Dr. Feynman like anything about President Trump? And my answer was, well, I'm not too sure. And if he does, of course, it's not a very long list, but a lot of the things we talk about are his cabinet appointments. And there are people like Betsy, the education secretary, that I would say isn't very qualified, and we'll put it that way.
DeVos.
There are people that he inherited from Obama, for example. I guess I would call her a casual acquaintance, Megan Brennan, the postmaster general, whom I met and was photographed with and got some autographs from at the Pittsburgh event. Very, very nice lady. And other people that are staff members that were there previously. But many of his appointments, people that are not qualified or seem very biased or have a conflict of interest. We've talked about Nikki Haley. We admire her as a person, multicultural, very smart, professional. Again, someone who has worked her way up and continues to and may very well want to sit in the Oval Office someday. We may not agree with all of her philosophies, but at least we respect her as a person. But other than Nikki Haley, Ron, is there anything, and let me answer Scott's question for you because I don't want to talk for other people. Is there anything about Donald Trump that you would say is a positive?
About him personally?
About him or his presidency, or, again, cabinet appointments count. So in addition to Nikki Haley, maybe there's someone else that you think he's done a good job appointing, but is there anything positive that we can kind of conclude about the administration or about Donald Trump the man?
Yeah, the other person who I would say I thought was a positive force and was an Obama carryover was Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin, who he fired via Twitter and by a quick notice, by Kelly, to him about that he was being fired. But I think that's a mistake, and I wrote about that because privatization of Veterans Affairs, the whole idea of that, I think is a terrible idea. And Shulkin, who was a carryover from Obama, the only Obama person to be carried over, resisted it and was forced out, and now the doctor who examined Trump and came up with what I think was a preposterous result, claiming he was only 239 pounds when everybody knows he's not 239 pounds, and also claims that he has good genes, he theoretically could live to 200. Some of the things he said in that press conference were absolutely ridiculous, and I wonder about the competence of that person who's now being nominated for Veterans Affairs. And I think, and I can't think of his name right now, it skips me for the moment, the doctor, but I do think that he is going to have troubles in the confirmation process because of the way he handled the whole medical review of the president. And he has no experience in running a large organization either.
Right, so do you think that...
What is his name? I'm trying to look it up. I don't remember what his name is for the moment.
Right, Ron.
Do you have it there? I'm just curious. I can't think of his name.
Right.
The doctor for the moment.
Right.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Ronnie Jackson.
Oh, my God. Ronnie, it's my name.
Yeah, Ronnie Jackson.
Was not impressed with what happened with the medical review, and I don't think he's qualified to be VA, and I think Shulkin should not. I think he was a good choice, Shulkin.
Are there any policies that he's made that you are at least not necessarily very happy about, but at least think are in the positive direction? And any policies or philosophies that you would at least put as somewhat positive?
I would say I have to do more thinking about it than I've been given the chance to be. But offhand, no, I can't think of anything. There might be something, but it would not change my view, which is also the view of political scientists in that recent survey, a few hundred political scientists, that rate him 44 out of 44, below Buchanan, Andrew Johnson, and Warren G. Harding and Franklin Pierce. So I think he's still the worst president we've ever had. And I'm afraid that with the tariff policy, we're going to end up causing an economic collapse of our economy. We're going to cause a great recession or a great depression. And this whole thing with North Korea and Iran and with the appointment of a warmonger to be national security advisor, I just think it's very dangerous. We could be in World War III. I just think we're in very great danger, and he's getting more unhinged with his comments. Even yesterday at the Easter Egg Roll event, he goes and starts tirading about military expenditures. What does that have to do with the Easter Egg Roll? It's crazy. You know, this man is totally off the wall, and it's scary as hell. And believe me, if Obama had done this, you could imagine the reaction of Fox News and Breitbart. But with this, with what he does, everything is just fine, and they create alternative news. It's despicable. It really is.
We'll talk more about the Veterans Affair issue. That's a fairly recent development, shortly. We're talking with Dr. Ron Fineman, live from Boca Raton, Florida, where it's always quite summer-like, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, just kind of reiterating about the Donald Trump presidency. And just when Scott, about a week and a half ago when I was in Pittsburgh, asked me, does Dr. Fineman like anything about Donald Trump? And looks like I kind of gave the right answer. I mean Nikki Haley kind of comes to mind as a staff member or cabinet member. But in terms of policies, not too much. But
Only David Shulkin offhand, because most of the other cabinet members are crooked to such an extent. You know, it's just amazing. Like Scott Pruitt, he should be out soon. But there's also rumors he could become the next attorney general, which I think is even more mind-boggling, because he's horrible as EPA head, is crooked, and is trying to destroy our environment. And now to move him to attorney general if Sessions is kicked out, I would hope he would not be confirmed, that enough Republicans would refuse to go along.
As we've talked about, it seems like with baseball season having begun, of course, not a very good start for the Reds, but what a surprise, right? As sad as that is to say, but it seems like the job stability of Major League Baseball managers and coaches is better than job stability in the Trump administration. We talked about that last time, and appears to be the case. So if you do get a job with the Trump administration, don't cancel your subscription to Monster.com. Don't put away the want ads. Keep in mind that every day that you still have the job may be considered
keep your home that you have, because you may need to go back to it if you got another one.
Exactly. As we mentioned, Megan Brennan still has the job. But you may have seen, Ron, a few days ago, Donald Trump kind of indicated he didn't really know what the post office does. So Megan Brennan being the second highest paid person associated with the presidency after Donald Trump himself. Does he realize that she gets paid that much? Even you and I were surprised by her salary. I'm not saying she's not worth it, but she is a rather high paid on a relative basis. Maybe Donald Trump doesn't even know that she has the job or exactly what she does and what the post office does. Who knows?
Well, but he might have looked at her and thought she's a good-looking woman, so he might decide to leave her alone.
Well, she does pose very well. The photo with me and Scott looks splendid with a capital S, and she has a great signature. It just basically says MJB with PMG underneath that. So I think maybe she should have gone into medicine as a career, as she signs better than a lot of doctors. But anyway, I did enjoy meeting her, and let's see what happens if Donald Trump realizes about the post office, and maybe he just thinks that everybody communicates via Twitter. Who knows? The man certainly is different, and that makes it more fun. Whether it's a positive
or one thing, Twitter had never existed yet. How would he have communicated with the American people if we did not have Twitter? Because after all, 10 years ago or whatever, we didn't have it. I wonder how he would have communicated if we were in a different time frame. That's what I wonder. Right.
We talked about 25, 30 years ago, he thought about running for president, and things were different then. There was the internet, but there was no Facebook or Twitter. Internet was quite different. So, yeah, hindsight is 2020. You really don't know. But this president certainly is unique. And love him or hate him, I think we'd agree, Ron, that his usage of social media has changed the office of the presidency. And the next president, and we'll talk about Joe Biden as someone maybe holding that office. He doesn't seem to appear to he doesn't impress me as someone who uses Facebook and Twitter a lot, at least not in the way and to the extent that Trump does. And how will that change things? I guess we shall see. So anyway, going back to your blog on March 30th, the title being "A Potential Way for Democrats to Win White Working Class Vote of Midwest and Pennsylvania in 2020, Joe Biden and Sherrod Brown." Now, Sherrod Brown is a senator from the great Buckeye State of Ohio. He's been on with the interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears, many times. And of course, who hasn't been on with Scott Spears? Every day I get surprised by whom that guy manages to get on the air. And we do a lot of fun things here at the station, Ron. Franco Harris, the great football player from the Steelers, was at the post office event, signed an autograph for me, posed with Terry Tackett. That's part of the fun of being at this station, probably why I continue to do that. Certainly isn't the paycheck, but the other things are more valuable than any dollar bill could provide. So obviously, Ron, it seems like it seems like Christmas never ends. It starts earlier every year. At this point, it starts around Labor Day, if not sooner. But the presidential campaign maybe takes a year or so break after the new president gets inaugurated. But after that, it resumes. Many people have been brought up for both parties, or even independents, for the 2020 election. We've talked about what I call red, white, and blue, meaning Joe Biden, Joe Kennedy, the second, or I think he's the second. And of course, with the red hair and the white hair and the blue for a Democrat, that's, I call them red, white, and blue. But you wrote about Sherrod Brown, a local politician here, well known in Ohio, a very established Democrat, and Joe Biden as president, or even possibly the other way around. But I think Biden will be more likely to be sitting in the Oval Office. Now, as we know, Ron, Ohio doesn't have a tremendous amount of electoral votes compared to California and some of the other very populous states. But it seems like whatever happens in Ohio affects the rest of the country, and that if you win Ohio, that's going to greatly increase your chances of winning the entire country. I would say the fact that Donald Trump won Ohio resoundingly has a lot to do with him winning the election. I thought he would win Ohio, but not as lopsided as he did. So if we have, and Ohio's tricky in that there are Republican areas, Democratic areas, and people like me, a lot of independents who really don't care what party you're from. Now, Sherrod Brown is popular here, though he is fairly liberal. But we think that people do, in most cases, root for the home team, vote for the home team. So with Sherrod Brown on the ticket, that would make it pretty, I would maybe make it more than likely that Ohio would go Democratic for the election. And we have Joe Biden, a more moderate VP who's well known, a more moderate candidate who is very well known, of course, since he was Obama's very visible vice president and a very good vice president for 8 years. So you're calling them the killer bees, indicating they were under consideration in 2016. Brown was considered by Hillary Clinton as VP, but she chose Tim Kaine instead. You know, Joe Biden's been brought up, Ron, as the presidential candidate, and we talked about Joe Kennedy. Now we're talking about Sherrod Brown, and I think they're somewhat different. Brown is old enough to be Joe Kennedy's father. Of course, he's an Ohioan with a lot of experience. Joe Kennedy, not as experienced, but his name is very well known, as he has many famous ancestors. We agree, Ron, that winning Ohio, even though it's not tremendous in terms of the number of electoral votes, for some reason it seems to have a lot to do with winning the election. We can agree on that, right?
Well, we've had six Republican presidents who came from Ohio between 1868 and 1923. So no Democrats, interestingly, although we've had some who have sought the presidency from there, from Ohio, like John Glenn. But six Republican presidents actually came from Ohio, none since. But Ohio is the swing state, the ultimate swing state, it has been shown, and usually goes with the winners. So it really matters. And Brown, if you look at his background, he's been a senator for 12 years. He's been in the House for, 14 years. He was Secretary of State of Ohio for 8 years and the Ohio legislature for 8 years. So by 2020, assuming he wins his seat back, he will have had 44 years of the last 46 that he served in government. And Joe Biden, even in retirement, has had 44 years. So here we have two candidates together with 88 years between them, which is unbelievable. Nobody's ever matched that. And they both have had exceptional ability to be elected and reelected.
You're comparing, and I agree with this, you're comparing Joe Biden to Walter Mondale, both mainstream but middle-of-the-road type Democrats who are well-known, known as nice guys. Both of them are, again, love them or hate them, they're known as just being good men who, I guess, relatively speaking, because all politicians lie, but they're toward the more truthful end of the spectrum. And I would agree, Mondale and Biden are very similar. Of course, Mondale, whom I was a big supporter of, as you know, he worked on his campaign when I was in college. He didn't win the presidential election, but maybe the fate for Joe Biden would be different. You indicate in your blog that they're aggressive campaigners and great orators. And I would say, Ron, I disagree with you on that one. Brown is not a good public speaker, and I think his amount of speaking should be kept to a minimum. Biden doesn't have the charisma of Obama or some other ones, but he's very smart and knows what to say, knows what not to say. So I think he can compensate for that. But I really wouldn't put Brown's less than par public speaking ability. I wouldn't put that as being a big obstacle. I think we can get around that, and he is certainly experienced and will help with a certain type of voter, and very well could help the election. In terms of ages, Brown is 68, or will be 68.
Will be 68 in 2020, right. And Biden will be 78 a few years from now, but yeah.
Biden is 78, and they would both certainly be at the older end of the spectrum, but a lot of it has to do is he an old 78 or a young 78? Yes, he looks old, but he seems very healthy, and he still seems as spry as he was 20, 30 years ago. So we don't want to use age as too much of a factor. And in our society, people are living longer. There are medical advances. And as you know, Ron, even in our lifetime, the 70-year-old person in 2018 is not the same as the 70-year-old person in, let's say, 1968 or 100 years back, 1918.
Absolutely. I'm over 70, and I look and act differently than my grandfather did when he was 70.
No question. it just does depend. But, yeah, I don't think anybody would think you're at the age that you are. And kind of the same thing for me. I mean, I tell people my age is guessed anywhere from the 20s to 40s. My most recent age estimate was 29, which is, I think, a little generous.
I've been said to be as young as 55, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on how you present yourself in a certain way. And in a lot of ways, my personality is of somebody older, but it's kind of the way you carry yourself. And staying healthy really is important. And Biden being quite visible seems like a very healthy upper 70s to me. And Brown certainly is a very hard worker, and I can't say I know enough about his health to say for sure, but I would say he's probably on the young end of 68 also. So
yes, and his wife, Connie Schultz, is a well-respected journalist who won the Pulitzer Prize for commentary in 2005, and she's a very inspirational person, as well as Joe Biden, who is a community college professor. So they'd be a good combination, first lady and second lady.
Right, and that's important too. I mean, you vote for the president in office, but you look at the family also. And we're both big fans of Jill Biden, another PhD person, and again, Sherrod Brown's wife, respected journalist, a Pulitzer Prize winner. So that certainly does help, and it just gives them a couple extra cards on the table in terms of seeing who's qualified and who isn't qualified. Ron, do you think? A couple questions. Do you think Tim Kaine's reign as a presidential or vice presidential candidate is over? Is he embarrassed by the last election, or might we hear more from him?
I don't think he's embarrassed. You know, as you say, I would say Kaine has a possible future, but he is very moderate. I'm not sure that Virginia, although Virginia could be said to be in play, but I think it's pretty blue now. I don't know if Virginia would be where a candidate for president would come from, either him or Mark Warner. They are very moderate, and I think we need someone a little more liberal than him to be a running mate. And as far as running for president, It's possible, like Mark Warner is, after all, the vice chair of the Intelligence Committee in the Senate, but somehow I just don't think either of them is very likely to go too far. But they might announce, that's possible. I mean, there's a slew of people, like 25 or 30, that have been talked about. I've done lectures already before different groups about the potential Democratic field, and I'll eventually write on that, because it's very large, you know, very widespread, including Joe Kennedy III. But as you've said, would Joe Kennedy III only be 40? And, you know, of course, the Kennedy name is good, but now this Chappaquiddick movie is coming out about Ted Kennedy, so that might actually have a dimming effect for a while on the Kennedy name. Plus, the Kennedy series on CNN, which has been on now for 4 weeks, has two more to go on Sunday evening at 9, also is actually fairly critical in a way. In some ways, I didn't even know about the Kennedys, some things I've learned, and so it may not be a totally positive thing to be a Kennedy in the long run. And again, his age is very young. And also, as you said, he's known as the Chapstick Kid now. So maybe that's something he'll have trouble overcoming.
So you would say that Sherrod Brown is a better choice than Joe Kennedy, the second or third, whichever one, I forget which one he is, but you say he's a better choice.
At this point, because of age and experience. Yeah, I'm not saying never for Joe Kennedy the third, but right now, yeah, I would think so.
Might he be good as a cabinet official, Secretary of State, or something else that he might be qualified for if the aforementioned Democrats win?
It's possible, but at age 40, I think he'd rather be a senator if Warren or the other senator from Massachusetts, you know, was to retire. But right now he has nowhere to go. But I think at age 40, it's not likely he would be given a major cabinet post. It's a little bit young for that. He needs more seasoning, I think. I think he would either want to take Senator Edward Markey's seat or Elizabeth Warren, but neither of them is about ready to leave. So it really blocks him from going anywhere else, except his name and his time in the House will build over time. But I don't think it leads to a cabinet position anytime soon, to be honest.
Now, Joseph Patrick Kennedy III, a.k.a. Joe, or the Chapstick Kid, he has a very good educational background. He went to Stanford and had a Juris Doctor degree from Harvard Law School, two of the best schools around in law and many other fields. Could he be Attorney General? Does he need more experience? I'm just thinking, I think there's a place for him in the cabinet. I kind of wonder where, and I didn't realize he went to Harvard Law School. That's about as good as you can get. Attorney General be a possible aspiration for him?
Well, I would say maybe a bit young, but actually, you know, his grandfather, you know, Robert Kennedy, was only 35 when he became Attorney General. It was controversial, but I think he handled it quite well. So based on that, I guess if he was 40, he could be Attorney General, possibly, since his grandfather was. It's a Robert Kennedy connection. Yeah, I guess it is possible. Still have a doubt that he would actually be picked for that or he would want that. I think he'd want to be in elected office because he probably wants to run for president. And although we've had a couple of cabinet members who became president, Herbert Hoover and William Howard Taft, both Republicans, it's not generally the best route to go to the White House from, you know, just those two cases are the only ones. And neither of them had ever been elected to anything. Well, he's already been elected. So once you've been elected, I don't know if you want to accept a cabinet post unless you don't have plans for higher office to run for.
Of course, Mr. Bush was a CIA director, right?
He was CIA director. He was H.W. Bush. He was also ambassador to the UN and also Republican national chairman. He was also a two-term congressman from Texas, yes.
So he had staff.
Ambassador to China. He had a lot of – all the things were appointed except for the two terms in the House.
Right. So he had many staff positions. So
yes. Brief ones, each one about a year, but he had been at the UN and head of the CIA and in China and also Republican National Chairman after he lost his House seat. Oh, he didn't run for his House seat because he lost to Lloyd Benson in 1970, who ended up, of course, being the nominee running with Dukakis in 88 and making a fool out of Dan Quayle, as you know.
When yes, he said Dan
that he
Quayle
like
is
a Kennedy.
A comical,
Jack Kennedy.
Right, a comical dude, isn't he? Of course, I always compare Dan Quayle to Sarah Palin. They're both young with nice-looking families, but they manage to say things that elicit a giggle or two. And we'll,
I must say, if you're asking me, which you haven't, to compare the two, I think I'd take Dan Quayle over Sarah Palin if I had to. If you held a gun to my head, I'd say, okay, Dan Quayle's better than Sarah Palin.
I always liked the Alaska slogan, coldest state, hottest governor. I thought that was very amusing. But you would agree, Ron, that Joe Kennedy III would be a better attorney general than Mr. Sessions?
no comparison. Jeff Sessions is a disaster. But if he leaves, the question is, who is going to replace him? And then that person could fire Mueller, in theory. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think Scott Pruitt would be a better choice. Just, he's different in the ways he's not good. But, I mean, it's just a horrific situation. The cabinet is so bad, with the exception of Nikki Haley, and until he was forced out, David Shulkin. But also, I'd say James Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, is another person I admire, and I'm worried that he might be pushed out, and that we might have a warmonger cabinet, you know, in the future, which is ironic after, you know, because I think Kelly may also be gone. So I am very worried about the effect that's coming from having John Bolton as National Security Advisor and now requiring a confirmation by the Senate. I think the man is unhinged. He's very dangerous, very reckless. He should not be the advisor who's next to the president every day in the Oval Office, but he's going to be.
Obviously, defense secretary is a very important position. So having someone there that we at least give a B to is okay. Let's hope he keeps his job. And that's always
yeah, I think he's decent, Mattis. You know, I don't have any complaints. So I guess I can make it three cabinet members, one already gone, Shulkin. But I think that you know, most of the others are really horrible, some worse than others. Like DeVos is horrible. Perry at Energy is horrible, doesn't even understand science. He's in charge of energy. And, of course, the EPA head, Pruitt, and the Interior Secretary, Zinke, the Attorney General, of course, Sessions. You know, the former Health and Human Services Secretary was forced out, Tom Price. It's the worst group of cabinet members as a group we've ever seen.
It certainly is interesting, and we'll leave it at that. Talking with Dr. Ronald L. Fineman from Southern Florida, where he hangs his hat and teaches part-time, writes a blog and writes books and does all kind of good stuff. His blog is theprogressiveprofessor.com, and we call this a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Ron, on the 2nd, on yesterday, I guess that's not really a word on yesterday, but yesterday you wrote, 50 years since the Martin Luther King assassination, and in many ways, not much progress in race relations in America. And obviously the police shootings, that has a lot to do with it. There are so many things we look at. Have race relations improved? Have they gone backwards in some ways? What can we do to have the equality that we all deserve, and that's the ethical thing to do? Of course, with Barack Obama elected, did that make any progress? Ron, do you think we're going backwards? And what's kind of your feelings about this? And it's such a sensitive topic.
It is a very sensitive topic. The Obama election was a good move, but on the other hand, it brought out the truth from the ugly woodwork, as I write. Racism is still very much alive and thriving, and not just in the South, and Donald Trump is really encouraging it, unfortunately, with his own past record in New York and elsewhere, you know, years ago when he was just, you know, a businessman. And we see the kind of shooting like in Sacramento, California, that seems totally uncalled for, what they did to that poor soul, you know. And it's not the only one. Now, of course, police have a tough job. I understand that. And a lot of the times you don't hear about the good examples, which, of course, there are many. But there's enough bad examples that it's very, very disconcerting to be, you know, to think that someone who has darker skin and is male is subject to much more danger than the average young man or middle-aged man would be. And I just think we have a long way to go. And I think we've made some progress over the 50 years, but there's an awful lot of room for improvement. And as Martin Luther King said, we should be judged by the content of our character, not our skin color. But that still is not really happening in many people's, in many areas of the country, in many people's minds. And I've met people who make statements, they don't even realize how racist they are, and I don't necessarily react to it. I don't want to start a fight in person, but I can't believe the things people say often. It's just amazing. They claim that African Americans and Hispanics have had too many advantages, and I don't really see that, you know, myself. It's still a lot easier to be born white in America.
How big of a problem is the police brutality and police racism? Look, typecasting, seeing a black young male saying, okay, well, there's a pretty good chance that he's up to no good versus a young white male or even an older black male. Where is that? What is the bias problem with police, especially with the young black males?
Well, I think a lot of it is police officers, I don't think, get enough education, from what I gather, in psychology and sociology to really relate to people that are different looking than they are. And I think they need more education, more professional training. And, you know, I don't think in many jurisdictions, some yes, but in many parts of the country, people can become police without many credentials at all or without much background at all. It's not as if every police department is the same proficiency level of education and background. So I do think that's a worrisome situation, and we need to really upgrade the education and the sensitivity of people who work in, you know, in police and fire and other social services, including social workers, including teachers. There are so many cases of teachers who often display hatred in the way they, you know, approach their students or what they write on Facebook or on Twitter. There was someone who said somewhere, some teacher who said that he got what he deserved, this young man in Sacramento. And I think she's been pushed out, because that's ridiculous to look at that case and to make a statement like that. It's just not appropriate. And no teacher should ever say anything like that, you know, based on their prejudice, because the information makes it clear that this was uncalled for. He was shot in the back, this guy in Sacramento, and there was just no call for it. They overreacted, and it's a deplorable thing, and nobody should be defending it.
Is training the best way to go? Do we need to audit and monitor police and their behavior? I mean, I know it's not an easy solution, and it's a difficult topic.
It's very difficult, yeah.
Is the bias more against young black males? Do you think that the bias wanes as for older black people? And is it more against males, or is it just the race as a whole? Is there any way we can kind of delineate that?
Yeah, well, there's been some cases of black females that have become victims, but they're far fewer. It's much more a male thing and much more a young male, meaning 20s and 30s. Doesn't happen as often with people that are older. Sometimes with Hispanic males also. I don't want to make it like it's only you know, that case of African-Americans. But it does seem to be a fear of the concept of the ghetto, you know, the idea of what goes on in Chicago there. But, of course, in Chicago, we have another problem, that we have a lot of young black males that are members of gangs, and they're killing each other. So there's tremendous murder rate in Chicago, more there than anywhere else, but also in Latino neighborhoods in Los Angeles. So it's a very complex problem, but you know, we have a lot of work to do on improving police performance and police attitude, but we also have to figure out a way, and there's no easy answer, 50 years after the Kerner Commission report that said we have two Americans, one white and one black, we still have much of that the same, and it's 50 years later, since 1968.
Obviously, we can't discuss the whole thing in a 45-minute show, but we do agree it's a serious problem. I don't know the answer. I wish I had a magic wand, but unfortunately, I don't. But we need to.
Yeah, I want to mention that I did an entry about Lyndon Johnson announcing he was going to not quit but retire at the end of his term 50 years ago, March 31st, and how I suggested this is the right time for Donald Trump to resign and not wait till the end of the term. I did do that a couple of days ago, because I do think that he has totally divided the country and that he is a threat to the stability of the country, and that therefore I think that it's important that he consider resignation. And I still think it will happen at some point, because the stress is and pressure is growing on him, and the likelihood of his family members being indicted seems very likely very soon from Mueller. And I think that's going to be a turning point. Plus, the possibility his wife may move to divorce him now. She certainly is not a happy camper with all this Stormy Daniels information. And he's still not mentioning Stormy Daniels in any of his Twitter feed, which is astounding, because except for Putin and except for Stormy Daniels and Rachel Maddow, he keeps on doing it with everybody else imaginable.
But you would be inclined to believe that the Trump administration has stirred up more racism and also brought it to the forefront.
I think yes, unfortunately, and I think a lot of it's from his own background when he was a landlord in Queens County, New York, in the 70s, discriminated against black tenants, and when there was that Central Park Five case where five, I think it was five people, five black young men were accused of raping a woman and were later found not to be guilty, and he was calling for their conviction, and he, even after they were exonerated years later, he said no, he still thought they were guilty, even though the evidence was clear it was not them. He's had a long history of racism. It's not like it just suddenly showed up recently. But, of course, what happened in Charlottesville, his reaction to call both sides having good people at the troubles there in Charlottesville, Virginia, last fall, that's outrageous, obviously.
Of course, like any show with the professor and yours truly, Adam, time seems to fly, and no exception today. We were going to talk, Ron, about the firing of Secretary Shulkin. We talked about it, touched on it briefly. But just real quickly, if we can do this in a couple minutes, you're saying it's a beginning to privatize much of federal government. You wrote that last week. And is that a problem?
Yes.
We need to not privatize these branches of the government, like the VA, obviously.
I do not support privatization. It makes it a profit motive. I don't think it should be that for the Veterans Affairs. It should not be that for education, which is what Betsy DeVos is trying to do. It should not be for prisons, although somewhat it is already, but that is not good. It becomes a thing about getting more people to prison because it's a profit-making issue. I think it's unwise to privatize all levels of government and make it only the profit motive. But I think it's not just him. I think it's Paul Ryan, not just Trump, Paul Ryan, and many Republicans hate the government, want to cut it down and make everything private corporations and even roads and everything else. And that's going to make life much more expensive for the average American and lead to more victimization and not necessarily better results in many areas of the American system. So I am definitely against privatization. I think even though government has its faults, it's still better to have it in the government. Federal government has been growing bigger since Teddy Roosevelt's time, and I support that. I do not think it's an evil and that it's somehow a conspiracy, as many right-wingers do think.
And we'll talk more about that next week, partially because I'm sure, as always occurs, there will be more developments on this story in the next 6 or 7 days. So we will just touch on it today and resume conversation next week, because I think that's a pretty big story. The VA is one of the...
To believe that there's not going to be any exciting news the next week or important news, you'd have to be delusional, right?
I would say the VA...
Of course there will be, right?
An important part of our government. Man, we want to be sure we talk about this. Well, thanks again, Ron, for being with us for a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Another brain-stimulating, provocative discussion. We invite people to email me, adam@wwgh1071.com, with questions, comments, suggestions.
Thank you very much again for inviting me. I had a great time.
And visit Dr. Feynman's blog at theprogressiveprofessor.com. Interesting articles that he writes every day. Thanks again, Ron. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
You too.